Hi, this is Eric Schlein of the Intelligent Investing Podcast. Today's episode of the Intelligent Investing Podcast is sponsored by Red Rock Running. Runners and joggers out there, tell me if this sounds familiar. You go into your local running store to pick up some gear, first the shirt, and as you browse the shirts, you see that nice, high-quality performance shirt running you at least $40. Then, you need something to carry your smartphone so you can listen to the Intelligent Investing Podcast while you run. Or maybe you want to track your run with a GPS. A smartphone carrier costs something like $20 or $30. And between work, family, and other responsibilities, the only chance many of us have to go for a run is early in the morning or late at night. That often means running in the dark. So, to help stay safe, you need a reflective vest to increase visibility. That's another $10, $15. So, in total, you can expect to spend over $100 just for gear that goes on your upper body. Red Rock Running has a better way. Their new Bryce running shirt combines all three of those products into one simple item. Secure pockets built directly into each sleeve carry your smartphone or other audio device, a couple of keys, headphones, or energy gels. Strategically placed, reflective material increases your visibility, keeping you safe when running in the dark. Intelligent Investing Podcast listeners know the importance of value. Purchasing a technical shirt, smartphone carrier, and a reflective vest separately costs over $100. The Bryce running shirt, however, gives you all three for only $59. And Red Rock Running is offering listeners this podcast an additional 15% off any purchase by using the promo code INVESTINGPOD at checkout. So that's right, listeners, if you are a listener of the Intelligent Investing Podcast, you get an additional 15% off any purchase of a shirt that's already a good value by using that promo code INVESTINGPOD at checkout. So remember, go to Red Rock Running, REDROCK running.com and receive 15% off your Bryce running shirt with promo code INVESTINGPOD, INVESTINGPOD. Carry more, increase visibility, decrease hassle.
Welcome to the Intelligent Investing Podcast, where modern portfolio theory can suck it. A student of the school of Graham and Doddsville and a clergy member of the Church of Warren Buffett, here's your host, Eric Schlein.
Hi, this is Eric Schlein, and welcome to episode 4 of the Intelligent Investing Podcast. We have a great show for you today. We have Nick Berry and Cam Rock from Berry Rock Capital. Welcome guys, to the show.
Hey, Eric, good to be with you.
I'm doing great. It's a great winter day in New Hampshire, and it's about 70 degrees. How are you guys doing?
That sounds fantastic. This might be one of the few days that you're actually beating us. It's pretty nice here, though, but I think we're at 50 degrees.
Yeah, it's been pretty nice the past couple of days. We were 80 yesterday, and they decided to get cold on us today, so I guess we'll stay tuned for what tomorrow brings.
Very nice, very nice. So tell us a little bit about, to the listeners, of, you know, who you guys are, what the fuck you guys do. You know, tell us all about what Berry Rock Capital is, because I think you guys have a very, very interesting model.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a private fund where we place capital into real estate, taking advantage specifically of a market dislocation caused by recent mortgage regulations. So what we do is we have a gap program where people that we feel should not have been cut out of mortgage qualifications, they can come to us. We'll buy the house that they want for them, rent it to them, and then in the meantime, they'll go get mortgage eligible and they'll buy the house back from us. So we put together a private fund based around this strategy that we really feels like gives us a opportunity to get into an undervalued position in real estate.
Now, just for the listeners at home or in the car, if they're listening to this in their car, what exactly do you mean by a gap program?
So by gap program, I mean we exist to fill the gap between where they are currently, which for all of our clients, that is that they're not mortgage eligible, but they typically have good income, have a down payment, they're financially ready to own a house. But due to some requirement that many see to be arbitrary in the mortgage regulation, they don't qualify. So
we exist to buy the house between now when they don't qualify and when they do. And so as soon as they do qualify, they'll buy the house from us with a mortgage. So we hold title and rent the asset to them during that time period.
Really interesting. So tell us, just to step back for a little bit, tell us a little bit about, you know, how did you guys meet? How did you guys come up with this idea? And, you know, when was it like, we just need to act on this? You know, what's the story behind how this all started?
Yeah, sure thing, Eric. So Nick and I, we actually met in business school at the University of Oklahoma, and kind of had a connection in some of the classes. I have a background in finance and entrepreneurship. Nick has a background in entrepreneurship and energy management. Got together and realized we wanted to do something in business in the future, not exactly sure what that looked like. And then Nick was doing a real estate flip here in Oklahoma. I'm in the Midwest, and lots of people were making good money doing that. So he was doing that, found himself over budget, over time, went to sell the house, and realized that there was actually a really good market of people who wanted to buy the house from him, but for whatever reason, they just couldn't quite qualify for a mortgage. So we thought there might be an opportunity at that point in time to step in and maybe provide this gap program for maybe a lower income demographic. And as we got to look more and more and do more research into that, we realized that this wasn't just an issue that affected the lower income or middle class demographic, but it really spanned all on the socioeconomic demographics. And so what we did is we put this thing together, got with each other, structured the program, structured how we wanted to set up our investment vehicle, and made it happen because we realized, I mean, the opportunity was now, right? I mean, these regulations had just gone into place, and we realized that if we were going to capitalize on this opportunity, it needed to be something that happened very soon.
And when you say the regulations just got into place, are you talking about the Dodd-Frank regulations, or what exactly are you talking about?
Yeah, you're exactly right. The Dodd-Frank Act that went into place in 2010, those regulations and some other mortgage regulations like that went into place. And those are the ones that we were able to kind of piggyback our opportunity off of.
So now when you guys are doing a deal, or do you have a fund for the houses that you're buying? How does it work in terms of investment capital? Is it your capital? Is it outside investors? How is that all structured?
So what we did is we put together a private fund, and with that, it's blind pool. So what that means is no single investor that we raise money from, their money is not tied to any single asset. Basically, they all have the same exposure to every asset. And so we decided to go that route as opposed to maybe trying to just solely use our own capital, even though we definitely have put all of our liquid net worth into this fund, because we feel like it's be unfair to raise capital if we didn't believe in the investment ourselves. We decided to go that route, raising capital, because we felt like it gave an opportunity to investors to invest in real estate with a risk profile and a return profile that they're typically not used to and don't have access to right now.
So when you say a risk profile, return profile that they don't have access to right now, can you say a little bit more about that? I'm a little skeptical, so if you could just share a little bit more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can start by taking a look at single-family assets. And typically, what is a difficult play in a single-family asset? Typically, it's difficult because you're spread out over a geographical location. And typically, it's difficult because you also have long-term deferred maintenance that catches up with you it's really difficult to nail down from a cost perspective. So with all that included, it makes real estate a little bit more risky than people typically are able to evaluate. So with our model, all of our leases are triple net, so that shoves the risk of the long-term deferred maintenance and the geographical dispersion of assets.
For those who aren't that familiar with real estate, can you just explain what a triple net lease is?
Yeah, absolutely. So triple net means that the clients are responsible for repairs and maintenance. So with them being responsible for that, it basically takes all those costs that we typically have to incur and puts it on the client, our tenant.
And so that gives investors access to investment that really isn't out there. If you look at triple net leasing, which tenants are responsible for repairs and maintenance, that's typically only in commercial real estate right now. So by us giving access to investors for in our model, they get access to residential triple net.
Interesting. Why don't you feel like other people have done this? You said that this is, you know, really not available unless you're dealing with commercial real estate. Like, why is that?
Well, so technically, right now there is one other group that's doing this and has this model. But the reason that investors wouldn't have access to it is because BlackRock and KKR are the only two investors in that group. And so those two institutional players have put hundreds of millions and billions of dollars on one of them has put billions of dollars into the deal. So the average investor, your high net worth individual, someone who's wanting to go earn a decent return, you're not going to have access to that deal because those two big players have taken all the capital investment opportunities. So there are some people that are doing it right now, but it's done on an institutional level and not given access to your individual investors.
Interesting. So if
Eric, I might add to that, Eric, I might add a little bit to that and say, you know,
the way that we
invest our capital and the way that we operate, you know, we kind of hit singles and hit doubles. We don't really swing for the fence. And a lot of guys who want to do real estate investing really love to chase that yield and go do a value add project and really try to, you know, knock out a 20-25% return on one deal.
Right.
And that's just not the way that we deploy our capital or invest our capital.
So now when you're – just walk me through the process here. And so let's say someone, a client, they want to purchase a home for some reason they're not eligible for a mortgage, but it seems like they had pretty decent cash flows. They just had a divorce or something, right? It's just some temporary financial hit. They come to you. What does that look like? What's the process? I'm interested in getting that perspective first.
Sure. So they'll come to us through realtors or mortgage officers.
And are these realtors or mortgage officers? Are they partnered with your company? How does that work?
Yeah, they're in our referral network.
Okay.
So what we'll do is we'll go out to a brokerage, a real estate brokerage firm, tell them about our program and the opportunity that our program provides for their clients that get denied. And at that point, they can begin referring clients over to us. So they'll refer clients over. They'll fill out an application on our website. Once we approve them, then they can either pick out their house, or if they already have picked out their house, we will go put the contract on. And then we close the deal within the next 30 days, and they're ready to move in. So as you can see, really identifying real estate isn't what we do with our fund, which is really unique because most real estate funds identify real estate. So as you can see, our real estate fund, we really don't look for undervalued real estate as much as we're looking for undervalued people. And what I mean by that is we're value investors. We're looking to get a good deal on something that everybody else doesn't see the intrinsic value in. And for us, that's people. So we're looking for business owners, people that have gotten a divorce maybe, people that have had an unfortunate medical circumstance. We're looking for people that are actually really good paying, solid financial health people. But because of some life event that was quite unusual, they don't fit in the mortgage box. And so the mortgage regulations look at them and they say that you're valued at X, but really they're undervaluing you, by 20 or 40 points on the scale. And so by us going in and seeing their true intrinsic value and their ability to pay, we're able to get a client into our program.
And do you determine that through their application, or do they come in for an interview as well? What's your process and the screening process? What's your screening process for these guys?
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, we do determine that in the application process. Eric and Emma, what we've done is we've really taken the federal guidelines and we've basically just expanded those. So we're not bringing in people who are wild cards or we don't have much information on, or people who don't know what it's going to take to eventually become mortgage eligible. So we piggyback off the FHA federal guidelines for mortgage eligibility, and we've just expanded those slightly. So that truly allows us to catch those people who are on the cusp of mortgage eligibility. So they're very close. So, I mean, I think Nick speaks well when he does say, you know, we are value investors. We find and we make money by taking advantage of the people that regulations have cut out and providing them a great service and a true pathway into home ownership.
Interesting. So how do you guys prevent, so being value investors and needing some kind of downside protection or a margin of safety, what do you guys do? You know, let's say there's a, you know, housing prices plummet again or something like that happens, or interest rates, you know, skyrocket over the course of 6 months or to a year. How do you guys protect yourself in this model?
Sure. So we do several things to try to limit our downside risk. The first is our clients give us 7% to go through our program. So that means that we buy every asset at an automatic 7% discount. The second thing we do is we use leverage in our capital stack when we go buy an asset. And so with that leverage, we put a 15-year AM schedule on that leverage. And that's really aggressive, especially in the real estate world. And that allows us to reduce debt, which that debt reduction, which is very aggressive, allows us to reduce our cost basis in the property by about 4 to 5% a year. So every year we reduce 4 to 5% our cost basis in every asset. And all that, both those things combined would actually allow us to weather the 2007-2008 crash, peak trough, and never go below with our cost basis below the market value. So we would have been right side up the entire market if we were to overlay an asset that we would have bought at the very top and followed it all the way to the very bottom.
Interesting. So now if someone is an investor, right, so they want to invest in this kind of vehicle, what's the process on the investment side? I get the client side. What's the investment side process look like? Right. If I come to you and I say, hey, you know, I think your model's interesting. I can't really get a high, you know, some kind of high yielding asset that seems like it's pretty low risk. And I want to invest capital. What would that look like? How would that work? What kind of returns are you seeing? You know, what's the details on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we've done is we've developed what we like to call a bond alternative investment for our investors. So it's a steady yield play. And what it is we've put investors their preferred return above in the capital stack above the general partnership compensation, and then also even above the property management compensation. So they're kind of right after the debt and taxes and insurance gets paid on any property, our investors get a preferred return. That preferred return right now is set at 9%, so and paid quarterly. So our investors would get a 9% annual yield paid in cash. And of course, if they want to, they can always reinvest their distributions.
Interesting. So let's say interest rates, they go up to 7 or 8%, right, at some point in the near to medium term, which there's a chance, right? That, you know, I can't predict the future, but let's just say that happens.
Absolutely.
Right? Would you essentially buy out, you know, what would that look like? Would you redeem your preferred, or is it preferred stock or limited partnership units or whatever structure that is? Would you redeem that and then issue new shares at a higher interest rate? Would you change the interest rate on the already existing units or preferred shares? How would that look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's limited partnership units.
Okay.
And what we would do is as interest rates rise and 9% becomes, in that case, it would become less attractive because your risk-free yield would be higher.
Right.
So we would just compensate our investors to make it a competitive investment. So if it rose 2 points, we might compensate our investors 2 points, 2.5 points to make sure that we're competitive. Because at the end of the day, in order for us to attract new capital and to keep capital from outflowing, which investors can redeem their limited partnership units, to keep that capital from outflowing, we would have to adjust for market return.
And the great thing with our model, Eric, is it's the fact that, as Nick was alluding to earlier, you know, we set our own cap rate, and we also set the price that we lease these assets to the client. So that's a variable that we actually have the ability to control on what type of yield our investors receive. So if interest rates go up, then that's something that we can actually pass on to the client, because our cost of funds is obviously increasing.
Right.
So money becomes more expensive at that point in time. So what we can do is our monthly rental rates will increase, and then that will allow us to pass some provide competitive yield for our investors in that particular environment.
Interesting. Very interesting. So where are you guys putting capital towards today in the market? Is it mostly, I know you guys are from Oklahoma City, are you putting capital right now strictly in Oklahoma? Are you doing other parts of the Midwest? Where are you at right now in terms of where you're currently putting capital?
Sure. So right now we're just in Oklahoma. However, we are expanding into Kansas City and Little Rock.
Cool.
In the near future.
Is it similar in terms of, steadier real estate prices out there as well, I take it?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Eric. You know, we're going to keep a very strict focus, in the Midwest, because we do like, I guess, the temperature of the real estate market in these environments. I mean, we're never going to go place capital or buy assets. Like, I say never. We're in places like California.
Like Miami or San Francisco
or
stuff.
Florida,
like that.
Exactly.
Or Vancouver.
They have rapid appreciation in home prices, but that also comes along with the rapid depreciation when the market falls. So we're going to stay focused and really stick to our thesis and deploy the capital in the markets that we think are going to provide the best returns and stability for our investors.
Interesting. So now what happens in a case where one of your clients is not able to pay you guys and has to default? What does that look like?
Sure, it's a really great question. So in order to think about this, you probably want to think about what happens if you rent a normal asset, normal single-family rental home out, and the renter decides not to pay, which happens quite often. If that happens, you typically have $1,000, $2,000 deposit. They've probably eaten most of that up in unpaid rent at this point. And then the other thing is that they're probably going to be pretty upset. You're going to have to go evict them, and they might mess your house up and have it taken care of it. Well, so for us, because we have 7% upfront from our clients, we have a significant leverage point over them that allows us to go to them and basically negotiate that they get out in a reasonable amount of time and leave the asset in a really good shape, so it looks as if they did when they moved in. And we've done that every time. And so we go to them and say, in 30 days, move out, make the asset look nice, steam clean the carpets, polish the granite, and if you do that, we'll give you back $500 to $1,000 of your original 7% that you put up with us. And so it's a win-win for both the clients and for ourselves. And it allows us to go on and move the asset to another lease option, or just to sell it and realize that profit that we have from the 7% they gave us.
Interesting. Okay, another scenario. Let's say the Dodd-Frank stuff gets repealed, which seems somewhat likely with the way that Trump is talking. What happens then?
Yeah, so the mortgage regulations are actually really complex and span past Dodd-Frank. No doubt Dodd-Frank increased them tremendously. We believe that even if Dodd-Frank were to get repealed, there would be plenty of people that didn't qualify for mortgages that we felt were undervalued, getting back to our undervalued thesis with these people. So we feel that there's still going to be a market out there. But let's pretend that not only does Dodd-Frank get repealed, but mortgage regulations go back to easy
mortgage regulations where if you're breathing, you can get one. If that's the case, then basically what happens is our entire portfolio of clients now all of a sudden becomes mortgage eligible. They'll cash us out and we'll realize basically the realization of our investment thesis to begin with. All that capital will come back into the fund along with a bunch of profit because our clients have cashed us out for that premium price that they'll pay for it. And at the end of the day, we'll just return capital and look for the next opportunity.
Very cool. Is there anything I haven't covered about what you guys do? And I feel like it's been pretty comprehensive. Is there anything else you'd want to bring up?
No, man. I think that's about it. I mean, we've.
It's fascinating what you guys do.
Yeah, we appreciate that. You know, we've been very particular in developing the model and developing how we invest capital and deploy it and return the money to our investors. And, you know, we feel like it is a fantastic play, especially in the hard asset market.
Yeah, you know, Eric, and I would say really there's two points that make our investment so great, kind of two highlight points. And this is what I tell anybody when I have only a minute or two to tell anybody about our program. Is we set the cap rates in our investment instead of relying on market cap rates when we go buy an asset. And we're triple net, which means our tenants are responsible for repairs and maintenance. Those two things determine how much you charge for the asset and then how much your costs are when you get into the asset. And if you can control those two things going into any investment, you're going to have a lot better chance for success and reduce a lot of risk.
Interesting. It's a very interesting model. Essentially, you're exploiting a market dislocation that gets created through government regulations like the Dodd-Frank Act. And then on top of that, you have a margin of safety. And then on top of that, you're looking for undervalued people, as you say. It's really interesting. If someone is, if any of the listeners are in the Midwest or in Oklahoma City even, and they wanted to, say if they're a realtor and they wanted to be part of your referral network, how would that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So they can go to our website. It's Berry, Berry, Rock, R-O-C-K, homes.com. And on there, they can look at the information we have. And if it's something that they think can help them and help their clients, they can reach out to us. Our phone number's there on the website. We'd love to hear from them.
Okay. And then if they were interested, if someone was interested in potentially investing and they wanted to get more information about that, do they have to be a qualified investor, accredited investor, and is there any where would they go for that information?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're only taking accredited investors, but if someone is interested in investing, love to talk to them. They can email us at I'll give you my email. It's nberry, B-R-Y, at Berry Rock LP, Limited Partnership, LP.com. And they can shoot us an email or they can go to our website, BerryRockHomes.com, and call that main line, and we'll be in touch.
All right, cool. Well, anything else before we finish up the show?
That's about it, Eric. Thanks for your time, man. Enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, it was great talking to you both, gents. Have a great day.
Okay, absolutely. Talk to you later.
See ya. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Intelligent Investing Podcast with Eric Schlein. If you'd like to connect with Eric for questions, comments, feedback, ideas, or to inquire about being on the show, please contact Eric at intelligentinvesting@gmail.com. So, in the words of Charlie Munger, I have nothing to add.